welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
Israel is one of Texas's largest trading partners. Any anti-Israel policy is an anti-Texas policy. Any boycott of Israel is considered to be un-Texan. And Texas is not going to do business with any company that boycotts Israel.
April 26, 2019. Thank you for joining me today. We have a lot of important stuff to get into. Very hard to watch video there, which we're going to touch on today. We have Iran, who is now ultimately warning that Trump himself may be tricked by his own war hawks by an upcoming false flag, which is interesting how much that aligns with what's really going on today. A new report shows that U.S. sanctions have actually killed over 40,000 innocent people in Venezuela, something you'll never hear from the mainstream media. This, of course, while Reuters was literally just forced to retract some fake news about Venezuela that at the time, of course, was widely spread on, you know, without any due diligence by the mainstream media, that, of course, stemmed directly from, guess who? U.S. intelligence. And, of course, we're not supposed to consider this with all the other information flying around today. That was just a bad apple, of course. But, of course, to begin today, another judge strikes down an unconstitutional anti-BDS law. And of course, this was the video you saw to begin today. This was Governor Abbott signing the anti-BDS bill in Texas on May 2nd, 2017, that was just struck down. So this is, as I understand it, this is the fourth judge to openly call this unconstitutional, the third judge to actually strike down the bill or strike down the law in this state. And this is an incredibly important story to begin with today because it shows us the most important thing I'm driving home with this topic, that this is almost universally from a judicial perspective, from a judge point of view, unconstitutional. Every single time it's been struck down as unconstitutional. And we also know that most Americans at this point don't support Israel based on new research. And despite that, our own government is continuing to drive through bills that are inherently unconstitutional and that go against your rights as Americans. And we have to recognize this. They're forcing it through either way. And of course, the first story coming from Anti-Media, always doing an excellent job, entitled Landmark Victory for First Amendment as Court Strikes Down Texas Anti-BDS Law. Very big deal here, as we're basically being told that if you disagree with this, you're an anti-Semite. That if you think it's okay to exercise your constitutional rights and boycott a government that's committing overt war crimes, that the United Nations literally just had a report about their overt war crimes, that you're an anti-Semite for wanting to talk about the obvious thing that's happening. Well, this is what the government wants you to think, and their dutiful mainstream media is reporting. But when you actually dive into the information, we see that this is wildly unconstitutional, and they're just simply doing it anyway. Again, our government doing things inherently for another country. And it's not Russia. Now, in a decision hailed as a landmark victory for the First Amendment, a federal judge on Thursday has struck down a Texas law requiring government contractors to literally sign a pledge vowing not to participate in the pro-Palestinian boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. So, literally, vowing to not participate in your constitutional right to boycott what you see fit as a person or as a contractor or as a company. That they're telling you simply cannot. It says, quote, "This is a complete victory for the First Amendment against Texas's attempt to suppress speech in support of Palestine." This according to Gadir Abbas, senior litigation attorney with Council on American Islamic Relations, or CAIR, I believe, C-A-I-R, one of the organizations that sued Texas over the anti-BDS law, and rightfully so. Suing them knowing that this precedent has already been set by multiple judges, the way that our system is supposed to work. But somehow it seems our politicians fail to recognize the importance of what this means. Now, CAIR filed its suit on behalf of Bahai Amawi, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly. I've covered her in the past. And this was a big story when this first happened. A Texas speech pathologist who literally lost her job at an elementary school after just refusing to sign a pro-Israel pledge required by the state's law. So literally saying you can't teach elementary school children unless you literally sign a piece of paper that says you refuse to boycott Israel. I mean, how does anybody think this is something that's logical or okay? Knowing that any government is capable of committing crimes. But they're just broadly saying that regardless of anything that may actually happen, you have to say you are not going to boycott this government, even if they commit crimes. That's an implicit statement in there, even though it doesn't say that. They're just saying you cannot boycott them. Not if you cannot boycott them if you're accusing them of false crimes. No, you just cannot boycott them. It says, quote, "It's a huge win, not just for me, but for everybody here in Texas." Amawi said in an interview with the Washington Post. She said, "I was in tears because this entire thing was stemmed from her ultimately being fired for not signing this." Now, and this is where this entire case stemmed from. Now, in his 56-page opinion, Judge Robert Pittman of the Western District of Texas ruled the state's law violated the First Amendment by threatening, quote, "to suppress unpopular ideas and manipulate the public debate through coercion." Pretty damn simple. Their only thing they're trying to make up is that this is an inherently violent movement. But that's obviously not the case. And the idea, again, that they're just trying to broad sweep this because of some violent actions that may have taken place, which I largely can't even see evidence for their claims, but may have taken place by an individual, somehow is spread over the entire idea of the BDS movement. That is simply not the case, as these judges continue to show us. That it's about suppressing unpopular ideas. That's what this is about. And that a popular idea being that the Israeli government commits massive war crimes. Again, that is even a controversial statement today is staggering to me, as we literally have people standing up left and right pointing this out. We have resolutions. We have reports coming through the United Nations being introduced and adopted by the community showing that, yes, they committed war crimes. They killed over 180 people who were unarmed, period. Full stop, as we keep hearing from the government as they talk about lies that they're saying about other countries. Now, as The Intercept's Glenn Greenwald wrote last December after Amawi lost her job. Sorry for those that have watched my past shows. I somehow can never manage to say his name correctly. The language of the pledge she was, quote, told must sign reads like an Orwellian or McCarthyite self-parody. This is from Glenn himself. The classic political loyalty oath that every American should instinctively shudder upon reading. At which you can see right in front of you. Again, an Orwellian or McCarthyite self-parody, and this is how bad things have gotten. That you could have made this joke years back about how bad things might be as like a cartoon, as I keep saying, that they're parodies of themselves today. This is how bad things have gotten. Now, the ACLU, which also sued over the anti-BDS law on behalf of four Texans, celebrated the judge's ruling in a statement late Thursday, noting that it marks, quote, "the third time a federal judge has blocked an anti-BDS law on First Amendment grounds." Now, again, I believe there's another fourth judge who has ruled on this, but has not actually blocked the law itself. I may be mistaken on that. Maybe I'm including one of the three that they're referring to. I thought it was four. But the point being, we don't even need to discuss any more than one. We have a precedent system in this country where a federal judge, a Supreme Court judge, has ruled that this is unconstitutional. That should be the end of it. But we have now three judges in a row putting down this law, saying this is inherent, not even maybe, let's discuss this, but is inherently unconstitutional and violates your First Amendment rights, period. And yet we still have our own government trying to force this through. Does that not give you a very alarming glimpse into what's really going on? That they simply don't care about what's legal, what's right, what's moral. They care about what they're being paid to do. We need to come to grips with this. And they're, trust me, they're not being paid by the American people. It goes on to say, quote, whatever their views on the BDS movement, members of Congress and state legislators should heed this strong message from the courts. This is Vera Edelman, staff attorney with the ACLU's Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project. It says, the right to boycott is alive and well in the United States, and any attempt to suppress it puts you squarely on the wrong side of the Constitution. You cannot misunderstand what that's saying. You simply cannot. And it's important as well to remember that this is not new. There's plenty of independent outlets that have continued to point this out, including this very story that I'm showing you. We're only just now beginning to pay attention, I think, to what's been going on for a very long time. Some people, and there's a lot of people that have been paying attention since the beginning, I would argue, that have been screaming and no one's been listening to them. But now people are beginning to wake up, I think. And of course, it's all at the expense of the most vulnerable among us. As you can see this article here, and this is a real story. The link is in the show notes. Texas officials forcing hurricane victims to pledge loyalty to Israel to receive funding. I mean, this is government funding, mind you, that we pay into with our taxes that these people have a right to because that's what the whole point of these emergency funds are for. And instead of giving them relief, hurricane relief to these victims, they first make them sign a pledge to not boycott Israel. How does that not shock and alarm everyone? And of course, these people are, you know, homeless, their families are struggling, they can't eat. And they say, look, I don't care what you, give me the piece of paper. My family's starving. But rightly so, many people balked at this and said, why would you include anything about Israel in a agreement between the U.S. government and its own citizens? How is Israel's name even included in that? That needs to show you the crux of the issue here. That between an agreement between a civilian of this country and their own government, they're forcing in the topic of Israel between you two. That needs to be alarming to us. Now, at this point, even as this repeatedly gets struck down as unconstitutional, 78% of Americans right now live in states that have laws or policies making it illegal to boycott apartheid Israel, or even their illegal Israeli settlements, which again, themselves are universally acknowledged as illegal under international law. Yet even though it's universally acknowledged as illegal, these settlements, to boycott these illegal settlements in some states is against the law. How is that even possible? I mean, we really take a moment and reflect on what was just said right there, that this is the backward nature of how our system works today. It has nothing to do with what's right, what's legal, what's moral. It has to do with what they want. And then they go around and, you know, aggressively try to propagandize you into thinking what they want is in fact moral, right, and legal, but it's not. And it takes the smallest amount of due diligence. Now, I wouldn't even say that. It takes you simply opening your eyes today to see that that's the case. And one of the most important aspects, in my opinion, of this campaign of suppression is to stifle genuine criticism of crimes generally committed by these governments. Pretty simple. And it's working, it seems, to some degree. In this case, particularly Israel we're talking about. But remember that their agendas, the U.S. and Israel, are closely tied today. This is why we have people like John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, who are openly threatening the International Criminal Court with both legal and physical action should they dare to investigate the crimes of the U.S. and its allies, crimes of which are verifiable, crimes of which were revealed to us by people like Assange, who are currently now being charged and arrested and tried to be prosecuted for revealing those crimes. Another chilling aspect of all of this, but no. Should the ICC investigate the crimes we know happened, you will be attacked. We'll even try to arrest you in a U.S. court, showing you that we think we're above the law, even in regard to international law. Very simple, they're showing you here. And while shutting down discussion of their criminal ways, which is the point, they're also working overtime to create their parallel narrative that is based entirely in fantasy. And this has never been more obvious than in regard to Venezuela today. And this fact is, once again, being put on full display, as has happened so many times just since this floundering U.S.-Venezuela coup began. The latest installation of their attempt to overthrow Venezuela, mind you. It's been happening for a long time, but it is on full display. But again, don't expect the mainstream media to show you this. Ultimately, what boils down to the exposure of their true mandate, which is to misinform you. This next article, coming from strategicculture.org, a very well put together article showing you that these people lie to you on a regular basis and barely touch on it when they have to do something like this, which is retract a massive fake news story. Reuters bites off tongue in U.S. war against Venezuela. Razanov forces withdrawal of news fabrication. Razanov being a Russian state-owned oil company. This is a big deal. And again, this is a huge retraction. Retractions are something we don't even hear about anymore. But don't pretend like you're ever going to hear this in the mainstream media. They will make sure they'll bend over backwards to make sure that you don't pick up on what this is. Now, the Reuters news agency has published an official retraction of an exclusive report on operations between the Venezuelan and the Russian state oil companies, PDVSA and Rosneft, after disavowing the U.S. government supplied source. Meaning their source of information for this now proven false story was directly from U.S. government. Interesting how that works, but we're supposed to trust them blindly, and if you think otherwise, you're an un-American Russian bot anti-Semitic show. That's what they want you to think. You can't question their the lies coming from the mouths of people who have been proven to be lying throughout history. You can't question them, though, because you're un-American if you do so. Now, the acknowledgement of misreporting has exposed evidence that Reuters reporters and its bureau in Caracas, Venezuela, Mexico City, Houston, London, and Washington are routinely relaying disinformation supplied directly by U.S. government agents in their attempt to damage Venezuelan, Russian, Indian, and Chinese operations in the international oil market. Seems how perfectly this lines up with everything we're seeing today, does it not? With all the oil discussion. But here's the important point for me. Obviously, we can see that they're profiteering today, that they're carrying out these aggressive agendas for at least in part to steal resources. I mean, we have to acknowledge this. Historically speaking, it's verified. We can clearly see it's happening today. But here's the bigger point for me that I've talked about before. According to a publication by Reuters issued on Tuesday, April 23rd, mind you, but actually made to appear to have been published on April 18th, you know, real journalistic integrity, the news agency has admitted it, quote, could not determine its earlier allegation that a, quote, scheme uncovered by Reuters was true at all. Let that sink in. The new Reuters claim also disavows the charge that Rosenef was acting illegally with PDVSA to bust U.S. sanctions imposed on Venezuelan companies. The entire claim, right? The entire claim that then the U.S. used to cast more sanctions is entirely false. And understand that the U.S. is the one that dripped them this false information that they knew was false and then used that knowingly false information to increase their pressure. That's what they do. Now Reuters says, quote, experts see no violation of sanctions, period. Now Rosenef's press statement issued on April 19th called the Reuters report an outright lie. Purposeful misinformation, legalization of rumors, invented information. Welcoming the correction in Moscow, Rosenef calls it, quote, an unprecedented admission that we were right in our evaluation of the Reuters article. Coming right off the bat and saying that this is completely false. And of course, then anybody claiming it's false is a Russian bot. But now we see that they were right. But again, you will not see the people that were calling them Russian bots swing back around and say, oh, excuse me, I apologize. I was clearly wrong. They'll never do that. And the image you're looking at here is what's very important to recognize, that we now know. This is the basic breakdown of information that most Americans don't even realize. I have a link to a video that I did in all about this topic in the show notes if you want to know more about it. But the reality that most people think that middle ground there, the Foxes, the Washington Post, the Times, the CNN, all the mainstream outlets, they think they've got all these inside sources and these people on the ground. And to some degree they do, but it's usually people they know they get the information they want from. They call them when they want to hear what they know they want to hear, the lies. But the point is, the information they get almost entirely comes down from Associated Press, the French news agency, and Reuters, who in turn get their information almost predominantly from Washington, the Pentagon, and the intelligence agencies. Big shock. That's why it's called the propaganda multiplier. These people regurgitate what they're told and handed down from the very people who have been proven to lie to us routinely throughout history. And now we see yet again, Reuters, who's one right in the middle there, is being exposed for regurgitating a story they were given by these intelligence agencies, and we now know is entirely false. This is the propaganda multiplier, and most people will never even hear that this story turned out to be false. The retraction that they barely put out. They will not talk about it. But this needs to, at the very least, call into question any other claims that are coming down from these groups about Venezuela, or any place for that matter, knowing that this was an entirely fabricated story. Now, international journalists, sources, express concern that the reputation and ability of Reuters to report internationally has been damaged by what they call, and this is perfect, quote, the Americanization of the news agency. This is a reference to the editor-in-chief of Reuters, Stephen Adler, who is based in New York. Now, Reuters spokesmen in New York and in London so far also refuse to correct earlier Reuters exclusives with allegations, again, against PDVSA and Rosenef, whose info, interestingly enough, also came from the very same Washington sources that have now been exposed as propaganda, and whose veracity was challenged at the time as propaganda for the U.S. sanctions war against Venezuela and Russia. The very same thing we're seeing now, but they refuse to even look into this, even though the very same claims have now been debunked by the very same sources, but they refuse to look into it, right? The point is they force the American people. It's on us to prove that they're lying. We have to go above and beyond to prove that they're lying, and all the way through, it's like a gauntlet of attacks. You're a conspiracy theorist, you're a Russian bot, you're anti-Semitic, the whole way, until you finally make it through and prove that they're wrong, and then they ignore it even more. This is how we work. And this happens over and over and over. So next time when they come out with a claim that we say that's obviously wrong, here's the evidence, and they call us conspiracy theorists for doing so, maybe you should think twice about that. Now here's another interesting aspect to this. According to the byline in print, the reporter responsible for the original and corrected version, you know, the fake news that went out, of the Reuters allegations is Mariana Paraga, educated at a private university in Venezuela. Paraga worked first for Reuters in Caracas. Subsequently based at the same time in Mexico City and in Houston, she calls herself an energy correspondent of Latin America. Reuters has published several, you know, quote, exclusives with reports with Paraga's byline, all claiming, guess what, anonymous sources for evidence that, guess what, the Venezuelan government and the state oil company PDVSA are breaking U.S. sanctions. The very story we just got shown was false. And we have numerous exclusives from this same person citing anonymous sources, citing the same thing we now know is false. Now, again, think about this in the context of, look at her byline there, very first thing, Venezuelan. Right? Because that's what's most important. Not that she's a journalist, but that she's a Venezuelan journalist, because that gives her more credibility when she brings out the mainstream lies about Venezuela that we've debunked roundly. And again, she's even herself been debunked. This is one of her stories that Reuters has been forced to retract. And she refuses to retract the story. I mean, this is embarrassing for these people, but they just double down, and they know that both the government and the media will refuse to actually give this the attention it deserves, so most people won't even be aware of it. And they'll take her next story at face value and continue forward, even though her anonymous sources are the very same people that we know have been shown to be wrong in this last story. Simple. Now, in March, reporting from Houston, Paraga advertised a document that she was given by the U.S.-financed opposition to the Venezuelan government. So now she's being directly handed information from the U.S.-controlled opposition. Real anonymous sources, real journalistic integrity. Without due diligence, mind you, because we now see that she's been wrong in the past, been proven to put out false information. She's basically regurgitating what she's given by the government-controlled opposition and their government handlers. Now, in a pitch for U.S. investor support, Paraga claimed, quote, Venezuela's interim government led by Congress head Juan Guaido is preparing new legislation to reverse late President Hugo Chavez's energy industry nationalization. Because that's good, right? Privatization is what's good for the people. Not at all. It's just how ridiculous. So she's literally saying that they're going to preparing new legislation to reverse this, making it sound like a bad thing, allowing private companies a bigger role in the oil fields and shrinking state-run PDVSA, according to sources by a draft seen by Reuters. Hooray! Basically saying that they're trying to force through illegal legislation as the false government that's going to privatize the oil fields and take away resources for the people, because they care about people, right? This is what they want you to think. This is literally like a public service announcement for the U.S.-backed government from a supposed journalist. Now, in her Twitter feed, Paraga has not made a personal correction of her now retracted story by Reuters. Instead, she actually continues to promote the retracted fake news story on April 18th. I mean, this is what these people are. They're continuing to drive it home. And even worse than that, although the Reuters management has erased most traces of the original story because it's an utterly false story, they have even failed to correct the Yahoo internet version. Of course, if it too disappears, by the way, there are several screenshots in the article you can see for yourself. But think about what this means. Right now, we have a story that's been retracted, proven to be false. The main source for it has now stepped back and said, this is false. We can't stand by this. And right this moment, we have a story in Yahoo misinforming people right now. This is fake news, people. This is the real meaning of fake news. This is still up right now, changing the opinions of Americans, even though it's already been retracted. Now, imagine if this was an independent source. This would be, they'd probably already shut down the website, right? Because they have to control misinformation today, even though they're the leading sources of it. I mean, so even while Reuters itself has retracted the story, something that rarely happens, if at all, today, think about that. Usually just, you know, changing the title or deleting information and not even putting an asterisk at the bottom. Otherwise, you know, violating their journalistic integrity, clearly. But a retraction's a big deal today. But even though Reuters has done this, the author is still pushing the false story right now. And there are still mainstream outlets maintaining that the story is true right this moment while it's been retracted. This is the U.S. oligarchy information dissemination trail on full display. From Washington to the Associated Press to Reuters to mainstream media. Again, for those that remember this, it's important to see what this propaganda multiplier really means. From intelligence agencies, Washington, Pentagon, right down to Associated Press and Reuters, and then they hand it right down to mainstream media, who sometimes, oftentimes, literally prints exactly what they're handed. It's not hard to see. And oftentimes, they don't even include that it's from the Associated Press. This is literal regurgitation from what they're told. These people are not journalists. So this should really make us question this left versus right, this Fox versus CNN mirage, don't you think? As we know for a fact that they all get handed their info and as well as how it's to be presented from the same people. And of course, the real purpose of this information control is just that. Control. To control the narrative and manufacture consent. And here is exactly what they are suppressing and do not want you to see. Otherwise, you know, known as the truth. This coming from Telesur. U.S. sanctions killed over 40,000 Venezuelans since 2017. Thank you for the super chats, Caesar and Patrick. Thank you for the super chats. I appreciate your support. But think about this. This is the kind of thing that they're trying to keep from your view. This horrifying reality as they wring their hands over, you know, a few people killed if it's in the wrong location, but don't talk about it if it's tens of thousands of people and the U.S. and their allies are behind it. Straight up hypocrisy. And again, think about that. They're trying to control the what you perceive while utterly ignoring facts just like this. Now, the Center for Economic and Policy Research, which it's CERP, we'll call SEPR for make it easier as we're going on. The Center for Economic and Policy Research, or SEPR, released Thursday a study revealing that President Donald Trump's actions against Venezuela are mostly affecting not President Nicolas Maduro's administration, but the civilian population, as more than 40,000 deaths have been brought about by U.S. economic sanctions. Now, for those that have been watching this channel, this is probably not shocking or surprising at all. It's what we've been, and again, this is we're talking about the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Mark Weisbrot is the co-director, the person we've referenced countless times. The point is that this is what we've been showing you. People like Alfred Isaias, the expert from the United Nations, who also said this. All of this is due to U.S. sanctions. They just utterly lie to you about that, even though the experts and people we should be listening to are very clear about what this is, what's causing this. U.S. actions are entirely responsible for not only the crisis there, but increasing it since then. Simple information. And now 40,000 people, they claim, are dead because of U.S. sanctions, while they pretend to care about people. Now, it says, quote, the sanctions are depriving Venezuelans of life-saving medicines, medical equipment, food, and other essential imports, according to Mike Weisbrot, the SEPR co-director and co-author of the report. Now, what does that also make you think about? Sanctions, blockades, depriving of medicine, medical equipment, food, and imports, maybe what's going on in Iran, maybe exactly what's happening in Yemen, maybe exactly what they're doing in Syria. Oh, but this is an isolated event, and you're all completely wrong conspiracy theorists if you think they're doing this on purpose, even though they repeat the same thing over and over and over and over. It's just so stupidly obvious if you just open your eyes and look at what's happening. It's all right in front of us. The report says this is illegal under international laws and treaties, and the U.S. has signed. Congress should move to stop it. But, I doubt that's going to happen because Congress is involved in the same ploys. They're being paid by the same people. Now, the economic sanctions as collective punishment, the case of Venezuela study, which is the name of it. Economic sanctions as collective punishment, the case of Venezuela. This study was also written by Jeffrey Sachs, a world-renowned economist who teaches at Columbia University and was a director of the Harvard Institute for International Development at the Kennedy School of Government. In other words, somebody highly credentialed, highly respected, somebody we should be listening to, or at least being listening to. When I say listening to, it doesn't mean we should immediately believe. I hope you all know that. Listening to, giving an ear to, considering what they have to say, which is something people reflexively don't do today if it seems like it's going against what they're told is the truth, which is the definition of ignorance. You're choosing not to hear new information. Now, besides pointing out that the U.S. actions have been rapidly worsening the humanitarian crisis, which is a simple fact, the SEPR study shows that a new set of financial and trade sanctions have been deployed intentionally to devastate the Venezuelan economy since the U.S. recognized Juan Guaido's parallel government in January 2019. The point being that U.S. actions have been ruining the Venezuelan economy well before this, but they doubled down on this and incredibly, as they said, devastated the economy, which directly affected the civilian population. Now it says, quote, Venezuela's economy crisis is routinely blamed on all Venezuela, but it is much more than that. U.S. sanctions are deliberately aiming to wreck Venezuela's economy and thereby lead to regime change. Pretty simple. It's what we've been pointing out the whole time. This is the Columbia professor said this and explained that, quote, it's a fruitless, heartless, illegal, and failed policy causing grave harm to Venezuelan people, according to the author. I mean, this is exactly what independent journalists have been saying. Exactly what anyone on the ground in Venezuela has been saying. The exact opposite of what our government and our lapdog establishment mainstream media has been telling you. So they're lying to you. It's pretty clear. The information's all there. They just simply say, this is the truth, believe me, with nothing to back it up. As they do in so many other cases. While we have other people saying, no, they're lying. Look at all of this evidence. And they still want you to just reflexively believe what they have to say. As we've been caught, they've been caught lying routinely. As Reuters has literally just retracted a lie about Venezuela that they are the ones that handed down. And yet they still want us to blindly trust what they say. You got to be it takes some willful ignorance to trust these people. Or at least to not immediately doubt that they may be trying to deceive you since they've been doing that routinely throughout history. Now it says, quote, since the January 2019 sanctions, oil production has fallen by 431,000 barrels per day, or about 36.4%. This will greatly accelerate the humanitarian crisis, but the projected 67% decline in oil production for the year, if the sanctions continue, would cause vastly more loss of human life, according to the report. And again, as people like Desaias and Weisbrot have said, that the sanctions on the oil specifically will predominantly affect the civilian population. That, I mean, again, other than the propaganda and the political angles from the U.S. government, this is simply a very basic acknowledged fact. We can see how this happens, but they just are trying to gaslight you and make you think you're wrong, even though it's very easy to see the research. Now, the SEPR report also reveals that Venezuelan's economy, the contraction of the economy, is clearly not, as it says, quote, a natural fact, but rather a consequence of the current U.S. foreign policy, which represents a, quote, very serious harm to human life and death. So literally now saying that not only is this because of them, but it happened. It's from the beginning is the problem that it is because of what U.S. has been doing there over the decades. Again, exactly what we've been trying to point out. So the report shows us that the U.S. attacked Venezuela's economy, chose to, willfully, intentionally attacked their economy, knowing it would hurt people, then took action to make sure that they could not recover from that attack. Then turned around and pointed to what they created and said, oh, look at how bad Maduro is. As the report literally says, quote, they made it nearly impossible to stabilize the economy, contributing further to excess deaths. All of these impacts disproportionately harmed the poorest and most vulnerable Venezuelans. I mean, I don't know what else people need to hear. This is what's happening. They are knowingly killing people, knowingly putting people's lives at risk in order to achieve a political ambition. It's as simple as that. Literally then, while executing some of the actual worst humanitarian crises in the world today. And ignoring it, not talking about it. Starving 20 million people to death in Yemen, while doing a fraction of that in Venezuela, but then while telling you they're saving people over there. Lying to you. And hopefully we can begin to see this long trail of lies that are being exposed. And we're seeing the very same tactics being waged against Iran, as hopefully many of you are beginning to pay attention to, as well as all the same lies, interestingly enough. They level just the same tired lies against all their adversaries. But a question that many have is whether Trump himself is a part of this deception or just an unwitting cog in a larger war machine. Most of you likely know my thoughts on this topic, but no one knows for sure. And anyone telling you different is lying to you. But it is an honest question that should be asked. And Iran at least seems to have an opinion that Trump is being deceived. This is coming from Zero Hedge. Iran warns false flag accident could lure Trump into war. implying that his administrators, his advisors, will be the very ones that will be lying to him, tricking him, as possibly has happened in the past. Interesting. I mean, this does definitely counter what some people may think. A lot of the staunch supporters of Trump, they don't want to believe that he's they either believe that this is all a big plan fighting the deep state, or the fringe of the Trump supporters do believe that he's wrong, but he's being deceived. And there's a lot of, there are some of those out there. And those are the ones I believe are potential that could be saved because they're at least open to the fact that it's not as what the MAGA crowd thinks it is. But even Iran thinks that he could be tricked. And I think this is pretty important. Now, following U.S. declarations that Washington and its allies intend to take Iranian crude exports down to zero, which was their quote, we reported on at the time, by canceling waivers previously granted to 8 different nations, which we also reported on, tensions are now soaring over specifically the Strait of Hormuz, which we showed in a previous show, with Iran's elite Revolutionary Guards, of course, attempting to lay down the law amid fears that the U.S. Navy could move to block Iran's access to the Strait of Hormuz, essentially stopping them from being able to shut it down. And all this given the new terror designation of Iran's Revolutionary Guard. Again, obviously, given the U.S. a broad sweeping, they can just simply claim, well, they're terrorists now, so we can do everything we've always been doing. Invade countries with no justification just because they're terrorists. And I think this is why this all happened, to at least give them that possibility. And remember, I find this to be very interesting. Many are not aware. I briefly reported on this before. It hasn't actually passed, which is why I'm waiting to report on it. But there's a bill right now that's literally the goal of the bill is to name the Russian, or at least to put it on the State Department and the Secretary of State to decide whether or not the Russian military is also a terrorist organization, as well as to decide whether or not to name Russia itself a state sponsor of terrorism. I mean, this is getting ridiculous. Now they're just naming all of their enemies' militaries as terrorist organizations. I mean, this is getting out of control. And I think everyone can recognize that this is spinning out of control in a very dangerous way. Because we can see actions taken by other people that align with what the U.S. is doing now that the U.S. would not be okay with. And Iran is already now deemed the U.S. military a terrorist organization as well, which gives them both the ability to act in ways they never would have before by simply saying, oh, well, they're terrorists, so I had to. And again, the state sponsor of terrorism, the only true state sponsors of terrorism today are the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. And again, this is one of those pesky little facts that we need to finally come to grips with. It's the truth. And we've seen this routinely. Even if you want to argue they're doing it for good reasons, it's still simply the fact. And there is no evidence to suggest that Iran, Russia, or the other groups are in fact state sponsors of terrorism. Do they also carry out operations around the world? Of course they do. But the only group that I can see and have evidence of funding the very extremists they pretend to be fighting is in fact the United States, Israel, and Saudi Arabia. But I digress. The point is there's a bill right now going through about to name them as well. And this is building to all of this. It's a very dangerous such situation. Now, on Wednesday, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said, if the U.S. intends to pass through the Persian Gulf's vital choke point, the Strait of Hormuz, quote, it must dialogue with those who defend it, which is not that abnormal. The same thing that U.S. does in its waterways, the same thing that Russia does in the Kerch Strait. It's not abnormal for this to happen. But of course, now that they're supposedly a terrorist organization, this changes everything. And this was the point. Now, Sharif's words were essentially a provocative declaration that the U.S. military must ask Tehran's permission to enter the Strait, something he knew the U.S. would not be okay with, especially at face value for the world. We just named them terrorists. Now they're giving us demands. That's not going to be okay for Trump. Yet, he interestingly doesn't believe that Donald Trump wants war with Iran, but that he could in fact be lured into one by his more hawkish advisors, this coming directly from Zarif. Now, it says, I don't think he wants a war, Zarif said this, but that doesn't exclude him being basically lured into one. This is interesting. We're seeing many of these other foreign nations beginning to pinpoint who's actually the problem today. And I find that very revealing. And it says, those who have designed the policies that are being pursued do not simply want the negotiated solution. But let me make it clear that Iran is not seeking confrontation, but will not escape defending itself. The Iranian foreign minister also interestingly suggested the possibility that American operatives or their allies could actually try to plot an accident to create a broader crisis. In other words, carry out a false flag in order to give them the justification for military action, something they've done over and over and over and over throughout history. So it's a very logical claim to throw at the U.S. government. Now, Iran itself has already threatened multiple times, including very recent declarations, to block the Strait of Hormuz altogether should the U.S. further restrict their oil exports. Though, which this is important to understand, that about one third of the global oil shipments come through the Strait of Hormuz, which is why, as I continue to point out, it's so important for them to take control of the other side of the landmass, which is the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, or the port of Hodeidah, which is why I think the only main reason they're actually trying to overthrow Yemen. So they're willing to kill 20 million people to control the strait. That should tell you something. Now, the White House will no doubt receive any ultimatum related to this from the Revolutionary Guard of Iran as tantamount to a terrorist group holding the keys, allowing passage through critical oil shipping lane. Again, which shows you why their declaration of them as terrorists has so much power, at least as their propaganda, that they can say, oh, well, we can't allow terrorists to control where a third of the oil comes through in the Middle East. And I'll be like, oh, that makes sense. We can't allow terrorists to do control. It's ridiculous. It's just like the U.S. arbitrarily saying, well, this Golan Heights is now Israel's. They have no authority to do this. They're doing it anyway because they're militarily powerful. And that's what we have to recognize. Now, along with tightening sanctions, the White House has indicated it will take measures to halt Iranian shipments international waters wherever its tankers are found. So now it's not only threatening to shut them down in this specific area, but they're now openly threatening to basically overtake Iranian shipments anywhere they're found in international waters. Can you not see the power the U.S. believes that it has? The impunity with which it acts? That it can do whatever it wants in anywhere in the world, but anyone else can't do the same, right? Their side of the world's off limits, but they can go and do anything they want anywhere. This is the U.S. oligarchy. This is the ruling class controlling them. This is what we're seeing. And we need to come to terms with who these people really are. Now, further addressing the tightening sanctions noose on Wednesday, Zarif said, quote, "We're allergic to pressure." And then he added, "Try the language of respect." Speaking to Donald Trump and his administration, he says, "It won't kill you. Believe me." Which is, it's got to be embarrassing for these people to be made to look like the children at the table. Because they are. I don't mean by... I don't know these people personally, but their actions very clearly make them the children at the table. What they're doing is childish. And again, whether or not Iran is even the person, the Zarif is even the person he's pretending to be, acting as the level-headed, moderate one saying, look, you guys are being crazy. It seems like that's the case, but even if he's not, the reality is what the U.S. is doing is made it that easy for someone like him to make them look bad. To say, you guys are, your bellicose, aggressive rhetoric is a problem for the world today. And that's why the U.S. has continued to be pointed out as one of the biggest threats in the world for most countries, as data has continued to show. Now, of course, while they want you to believe the lies, all the many, many lies they're spreading today, while they really want you to believe those lies that they're spreading about their adversaries, mind you, and in this case, it's Iran, lies that it seems no one is really buying, the truth, at least in part, of why this is all happening is right in front of you, if you just have the eyes to see it. For the last story of the day, coming from the Middle East Monitor, a very important story that shows you the crux of the issue here. U.S. oil companies to make billions out of tougher sanctions on Iran. But I'm sure this was all just a coincidence, right? It's all just happily worked out. Of course, it's all just naturally organic things that happen because they're the good people and good people benefit from good things. I mean, it's so ridiculous how people can see what they want to see. This is at least in part one of the large reasons why this is happening. And if we're supposed to pretend that this benefit was not considered before, you're being so incredibly naive. These companies are making billions as the U.S. is attacking people that have not attacked anyone else in hundreds of years. It's time we come to terms with what's really happening in front of us. Now, the market value of U.S. drilling companies has interestingly increased by billions of dollars after Washington announced that it will not renew sanctions waivers granted to 8 countries allowing them to import oil from Iran, bringing it down to zero, they said. The companies, which are concentrated in states such as Texas, Oklahoma, and California, appear to be the big winners from tougher sanctions on Iran. The U.S. decision has also increased the profits of U.S. energy companies that are among the biggest beneficiaries of sanctions aimed at crippling Iran and punishing it and punishing it every way possible, in ways that are seem absolutely ridiculous today, as well as driving them to the negotiating table, a table which it's really not even a negotiating table, I would say, driving them to bend the knee to U.S. interests. Now, according to Bloomberg, Brent contracts jumped to a six-month high with Washington's announcement that it, of course, will not renew its oil waivers. But again, I'm sure it's all just a happy coincidence that U.S. drilling companies with clear connections to numerous politicians, as well as U.S. energy companies with obvious government connections, are wildly profiting from the U.S. attack on the Iranian economy. I'm sure it's just a happy coincidence. You know, sort of the same coincidence that's happening in Venezuela right now. But if you think that this, for one second, if you think this crony capitalist profiteering is some sort of orchestrated siphoning of resources and gaining of geostrategic control by creating false claims about U.S. enemies, then you're a wild-eyed conspiracy theorist. You know, and, you know, don't mind the man behind the curtain. They literally want you to ignore your senses, ignore your intuition, ignore your common sense, and just trust what you're given. Ignore all the times they've lied to you. Ignore all the times their mainstream media has been exposed as frauds, including the story from today. Ignore all the evidence flooding in from independent journalists on the ground and just blindly believe the words of the very same men who have been caught lying about these exact type of government crimes. It could not be more obvious. This boils down to a simple choice. Do you want to keep your head in the sand and remain blissfully ignorant of what is going on around you while you are increasingly being shoved further into your cage? Or do you wish to embrace the uncomfortable truth that will ultimately set you free? It's a choice. And I to some degree, understand why people would choose to not pay attention to all the things happening, to keep themselves disconnected from the reality. But there's never been a more important time to stand with truth. Because there'll be a point, if we don't today, where we won't be able to come back from. That we'll get so far past this that we will officially lose connection with anything that resembles truth. That's why it's more important than ever today to stand with your independent media, to fight for the truth, and spread the information that you believe. And question everything that comes across your desk, every single time, including from me. I appreciate you being here today, and if you'd like to support this channel, as we are 100% people-funded, there's plenty of links in the show notes for you to do so, from our Patreon to our PayPal to our Bitbacker. But if you'd like to purchase a t-shirt, let's say, to support this channel, something that is a good way to spread the word, to get out there with your shirt, wake people up, and, you know, represent that you support the truth, or you support, at the very least, the people that are out there trying to support the truth. And if you'd like to do that, you can do so from one of our, from Truth Clothing, buy one of our t-shirts, question everything. Support the channel, wake people up. And of course, you can see that I'm actually wearing my Question Everything t-shirt today. But we are people supported from top to bottom. So any support you can give us will go a long way. And again, thank you for being here today. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.